The greatest goal you've never seen brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. As you can tell, I'm not Patrick. I am Frosty, and I am joined by Cam.
Good evening.
And Dave.
Hello, hello.
Do you know, every single time you've opened this podcast, you've used that exact same one?
Yeah, I'm a creature of habit, Cam.
Fair enough.
That's the only reason I'm still back here.
Yep.
Right, we've actually got football to talk about for the first time.
I want to say, isn't that awesome? But obviously the result didn't go quite as I'd hoped.
No, and it wasn't the greatest
viewing. To be fair, last week you all picked we were going to get absolutely pumped, so
we were
it went a lot better than both of you hoped.
We were closest in our predictions than anyone else.
Well, I picked 2-2 draw.
Yep, exactly. And we lost 2-1. We picked 3-1 loss, therefore...
In terms of total goals, I was definitely closest.
No.
I was out by one.
So were we. We were out by one. You don't get that, Dave. Sorry.
I tried.
No.
And I think actually one of you picked 3-0. I don't think there was a 3-1.
No, he was 2-0. Me and Pat were 3-1. You were 2-2. To be fair, you almost had it right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've kind of skipped around the end there. Unfortunately, a one-goal loss, 2-1. Should we just start with get right to that first goal? Because it pretty much was not much in that first few minutes, to be fair. Certainly not much you want to talk about.
No. I think, I don't know, it felt like a first game of the season.
Oh, yes.
Like, that's what I thought about it. And, I mean, you want to jump to that goal? I mean, what could anyone really do about that goal? That is just a hell of a strike. Well, someone probably should have gone to the ball. They definitely hung off him a bit, but you're also not expecting him to put a top in like that.
Certainly not a new fella like that. No. Was it his debut?
His A-League debut, yes. Yeah.
At least his starting debut, anyway. He might have come off the bench.
Even the best players in the league, you probably in that area of the field give them a bit of room. Maybe not quite as much as he had, but you're not expecting anyone to hit that like that.
No.
Honestly, the only other time I remember seeing a goal like that from the same area was Rowley against Adelaide, and he put that top ins as well because people stood off him. But if he is shooting from there, we have done our job right. He's just happened to get one out of the strings and absolutely nail it. It was just a beautiful goal.
I remember Topol Stanley getting one like that as well. It was from even further out, though, and no one was thinking that.
Actually, Vinny got one, obviously, in Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, true.
Mariners. But they don't happen often. No. And that's why they stick in your memory. It was a stunning goal. You can't argue that Sydney didn't deserve the lead. I thought they were definitely the better side of the two at that point. But, again, first game, we weren't out of it. It's just we were playing a team that was better than us.
They'd also had a bit of practice, too. They'd had the Asian Champions game like a week or two before, and they'd had some
You're looking at me like I'm going to help you with details here. I've got no idea.
Normally I do that, and normally you do. So
no, not this time. To be fair, Pat's normally your savior there.
No, Patrick just makes it up.
And it sounds good. But the other thing I want to say is, like, we also didn't put out our strongest 11, in my opinion. We had some pretty big names that were left off the starting lineup, and we can talk about the reasons for that later, but it's just, you know, we went out there with probably a slightly weaker squad to start that. So it wasn't surprising that that first period felt a bit more scratchy again, because it wasn't our kind of A team either. You had some new faces there, and, you know, it showed.
We should probably actually go through what team we did put out there. So the back four was McGarry, Laws,
Devere, and Payne.
Yep. That was as we expected.
Yep, in front of them, Devlin Roofer, as we expected. In front of them, Lewis and Maratovic, which definitely wasn't expected.
No.
And in front of them, Ball and Sotirio. Ball being expected, Sotirio definitely not.
No. So Piscopo was out injured. Hamed and Ulysses Davila. God, almost did it. Thanks, Bozzy, you dick. Both of them started on the bench. So that was unusual. Most of us would have picked at least Davila. if not Hamed, to start.
Yeah.
Piscopo, you'd assume, would have started.
Surely. I would think he'd have started. It would be him or Clayton Lewis to start in that other spot, in my opinion, if Piscopo had been uninjured, shall we say.
Yeah, for me, Mradovic is a bit of an unknown quantity, but I don't know that he's...
Never seen him play until that game, no. And he was incredibly anonymous. And
yeah,
there's been a lot of chat in the last week about, you know, who was better and the formations are better and with the subs that we used and when they came on, but we don't know what Uli's asked them to do. Lewis, when he was...
Uffy.
We don't know what Uffy's asked them to do. Lewis and Mradovic were pulling quite wide and taking up fullback space for a long period of time in the period of time they were when they were on the field, which obviously stopped McGarry bombing forward, stopped Payne going forward. Mm. When Lewis and Mradovic have come off, obviously we've brought on Uli and Hamed, giving them different instructions, and Fenton, who was then at left back, bombing on constantly and getting a pile of crosses. And so
I don't think he even bombed forward. He just looked like he was standing out there.
Exactly. So I think that there's been a lot of chat around the performances, and there's no doubt I thought Fenton did quite well. But I also think that it came down to the people that were on, the instructions they were given, and the game situation that we were in at the time they were on the field.
We should probably just stick with the first half before we get to Louis Fenton.
Sidetracked.
You were getting excited, mate, and that's good. That's why you're here. So, yes, obviously that screamer from Neem.
Hold on, I'll bring it up again because I can't remember the names.
No, I remember he's a fresh face. Looks like Trent Bolt's younger brother.
I want to say, but I'm...
Yeah, Niederhoff? I thought it was
Neuenhoff.
Neuenhoff. Oh, we were
both pretty close.
Yeah.
But still miles away.
Yeah, 19-year-old, fresh-faced little kid, but man, he hit it. He hit it cleanly. I think Dave, Cam was saying that Sydney were probably on top. I didn't think that it was totally fair 1-0 by that stage, but you can't argue when someone hits that.
Yeah.
And then it was a bit of to and fro, not quality.
I think even up until that point, it was a bit to and fro. I don't think Sydney had a hell of a lot of good, clear chances. They had a lot of territory and a lot of possession, but they weren't actually doing a hell of a lot with it.
No.
And then the goal they had was a screamer out of nowhere. So it wasn't like we were getting cut open constantly. You know, there definitely were some issues there, I'm sure Uffy would look to fix. But we weren't constantly under the pump with great shots and, you know, we didn't have Stefan keeping us in this. It was, you know, them looking a bit scrappy and feeling themselves out and us letting them have a lot of the ball and, you know, hoping something was going to happen.
Stefan was definitely busier,
yeah,
but it wasn't like he was making saves.
No.
He was tidying up in his box. He was marshalling his troops well, and there was definitely a lot of pressure in the box. But, yeah, there wasn't piles of shots coming in from Sydney. No. It didn't feel like we were going to concede piles of goals,
which is
a real positive because pre-game, I really thought our weak link was going to be our defence. I genuinely thought that. I think I said it last week.
I still think that. Having watched this game, I think we didn't in this game look like we were going to concede a pile of goals, but I think there'll be a lot of that footage that, you know, they will have done analysis sessions after, and there'll be a lot of stuff they want to fix there because there was a lot of quite easy ball in between the centre-backs, for example. There were a lot of times players in that back four were out of position and no one was really calling them on it. And all of that stuff is stuff we talked about. Mm. Of having a reasonably inexperienced back line and a person who isn't used to leading the back line suddenly leading a back line. But it's all just stuff to work on. I think it will still be the weak link, and as teams get better at exposing that and looking at that same video footage and going, okay, here's the weak points, let's attack them there, we might concede more. But hopefully we're correcting those issues. So it definitely feels like the area that needs the most work. But against a team who didn't have that analysis up front, it was their first run out of the season too, you know, they weren't going to expose us in this one.
Yeah. No, it also felt like their possession was quite slow.
Yeah.
It was very much a ponderous thing. And we got numbers back and held them at bay and got into the game, I think, a little more. I felt like Sydney were playing a lot within themselves. I noticed that certainly – I mean, we should probably get on to the goal before we kind of get on to some of the substitutions, because I thought the subs were actually really interesting in this game. Not so much from where did that come from, but the way they injected themselves. But there was the wonderful Mradovic goal.
Goal of the season by a country mile. Absolute stunning, stunning goal.
Oh. I mean, it'll certainly be talked about for a long time.
Yeah. Honestly, if A-League fans don't vote that as goal of the season, they have no. It was just so peak A-League. It has to be voted. It's never been anything as peak A-League as that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I agree. It definitely was peak A-League, but I also really struggle, having now seen the footage that exists of the goal, with how on earth the commentators were that excited about it. Because the way they're commentating it, because obviously you got a bit of commentary before the picture cut out and, you know, everything cut out on us, where it sounded like they were watching some kind of absolute wonder goal. They were genuinely ecstatic with a you know, unbelievable finish.
Just in case someone isn't aware of, been living in a cave, the footage came cut out maybe 10 seconds before the goal?
Not even. It was like 2 to 3 seconds. The ball had been played down the right to, I think it was Ball that played the cross in.
I think it was.
And he was running onto the ball to play the cross when the footage cut out. And then we scored straight away.
Yeah. But you could still hear the commentary even though you had a black screen, and you were thinking, oh my goodness, we've just missed an absolute screamer.
Yeah.
No.
It was a scuffed shin. I think is a nice word.
Miskicked it, and it just went in off the foul.
I don't think that's a little unfair. He was aiming that corner. He just scuffed the shit out of it and shinned it.
It was shinned. I'll give you that. I think he was trying to go near post with the side foot, and he screwed it up, and it's gone far post, and that's what's wrong footed the keeper, giving him enough time for it, because it wasn't travelling very fast at all.
No, it was a scuff.
Yeah.
In his defence, I will say that was an awful cross. It was in the right spot, but
any cross you score off.
Well, yeah,
I'll be honest, mate, I love those kind of crosses. Exactly, it was on the right foot to side foot at home. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, but if he hits that clean, it looks like a beautiful cross.
Yeah, but it hasn't. I mean, what you want is a ball coming along the ground or in the air to head. You don't want it in between. You don't want it kind of just above or just below waist height or skimming off the ground.
That was about knee height.
It was about knee height.
I would have taken that as a striker at that level, 100%. That's a good cross, and he could do better with that.
No,
I don't have any issue with that at all. He was also in time and space.
Oh, he was.
Could have taken a touch,
but he didn't know that. I mean, he wouldn't have known that he wasn't going to be shut down. And you're playing professional football. You're basically just on the penalty spot by the look of it, and you don't think that you're going to get a time to have a touch and then shoot. There's no way you're taking the shot first time.
I think you're doing the service at a cross a disservice.
No, I mean, honestly, it was the right position and went to him.
I think he's just got a bag of nerves because it's his first professional game and he's in with a chance to score, and he's just messed up his shot.
He scored a goal.
Scored,
I think we're all being far too harsh on what was.
You are right.
In any other circumstance, a perfectly acceptable goal. It was only notable because the footage cut out and the commentators made it sound like a screamer.
Yeah.
If that just goes in and we're watching the footage as usual, you go, good, we're back in this, and that's the end of the discussion.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So that was halftime. Yeah. 1-1 in the sheds. We've come out and it's pretty much of the same.
Before we move on, I think we should address how terrible this is from Fox in terms of the cutting out of the broadcast, because the only way they end up with any footage of it at all is because there's definitely an analysis camera being used by one of the teams, whether it be the Phoenix or the Sydney staff. They're recording the game for video analysis, and they've ripped the footage off that wide-angle camera and shown it to us 15, 20 minutes later when they finally got it. But they lost all footage entirely for this period. That is not the sign of a world-class broadcaster.
I got to say, the official Knicks account, the tweet that they sent out saying, does anybody have footage of that goal, asking for a friend with the Fox emoji after it, that was possibly one of the best tweets the official account has ever come up.
I also enjoyed the "who scored" crying with laughter emoji, because they didn't know. I mean, no one in the Phoenix knew anything more during that moment than what the viewers at home were seeing. It was a very humorous moment where it's like, well, how do you even update people when no one knows who scored the goal or what it even looked like? And at best, you're getting some tweets from people at the ground who may or may not have seen it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's PK League. It really is.
I tell you what, it certainly made halftime chats at the pub very lighthearted. It was excellent.
Mm. I mean, I was only disappointed that we didn't get a reenactment with Robbie Slater out there.
Oh, that would have been
rolling gold. The ball towards the line once again. And, yeah. You know, that would have been fantastic.
And just holding it on his shin to show where it's hit. Oh,
would have been good.
That would have been outstanding.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not to be.
No.
No Slater for us. Only Bozza. And my God, he's an idiot. Sorry, he was bugging the shit out of me all game.
Oh, you've got a lot of season ahead of you, my friend. Really a lot do. Of season ahead of you. Because do you know how many games you're going to have Piney at this season?
Yeah.
Probably none.
And certainly not going to any games. So.
Certainly not before April.
Yeah.
Probably looking like not in April either.
Yeah, thanks. Now I'm really sad. So we'll get on to the rest of the game. So basically we went in to that second half and it was much of the same. Fairly even. The midfield were both midfields looked fairly stretched. There was a lot of toing and froing. And then the ref has managed to see a handball on David Ball and not even the Sydney players. That one Sydney player put his hand up for it and the rest of them just kind of went, nah, but the ref's seen,
yeah,
seen
that was my big question here as well. Like, they didn't show a replay of any of it, and I haven't gone back to watch again. But in the moment, no one saw a handball there, other than basically the referee and a lot of players, both teams were a bit bemused by what on earth he was blowing his whistle for.
Yeah, so that's maybe 10, 12 meters out from the box. Maybe not that far.
No, not that far out from the box.
7 or 8.
I don't know.
I reckon he was about. Oh, he's about 25 from goal. Yeah, I think he's about 25 from goal.
So I would agree with that.
It's sat there. Branton's had a couple of worldies from there, but everyone's thinking it's early days. And he's hit with the outside of the foot, and it was an absolute screamer.
Yeah.
It's curled a mile. Was going it pretty much straight at Stefan.
Honestly.
And then it's curled away.
It was the third best goal of the game, right? But it was still a cracker.
Third best?
Yeah, because Mradovich's goal of the season, obviously.
Oh,
and
right.
And Neuenhofer's goal of the round.
I want to question this goal because, I mean, he's obviously hit it very well and done exactly what he needed to do. But where on earth was Mradovich standing and where on earth was a wall? And in that position, he had two men standing off to one side, not even particularly in front of the goal, and then he stood kind of behind that wall, not even covering the side that had no one on it. So it left a huge space for them to have a go at. And, you know, you still got to hit that space, and he does it perfectly. But they've let him have a very obvious spot to aim at, and he's hit it perfectly. You haven't asked him to beat an effective 4 or 5-man wall, which in that position on the field, you might well have seen the keeper set up 4 or 5 men.
Yeah, the one thing that Bozza did actually contribute positively was he said that that Stefan either did a half step to his right to that near post, or his foot slightly slipped and that held him up. But yeah, the wall, that was ridiculous. A two-man wall, wall you do on the sideline.
Yeah.
You don't do it right out.
And I think that I want to put blame on one person for this. It's Stephen Taylor. Because you know who would have been standing on that ball, making sure there was enough time to set up a proper wall? Taylor would have been, 100%. Then he would have been dancing around and messing with all sorts of people and doing all the stuff he does on free kicks both ways, you know, whether they'd be attacking or defending. But no one stood on the ball and gave them time to get a wall in place.
Do you know why? Do you know who was in the wall?
No, I couldn't tell you.
Rufa and De Vere. Because I saw them, two of the midfielders go in there. I can't remember which ones. But they literally swapped them out. They wanted two tall guys in there. Your two organising defenders, Rufa and De Vere.
Yeah, I think Rufa, okay, I'm okay with Rufa being in there, but De Vere should be in there, back in the goal box.
Because, I mean
if,
you want
if
those
you've
guys
got a
five-man
wall, De Vere's probably in there. But if you've only got two people, he needs to be back marking someone. He's a defender.
Yeah.
But if you've got five in there, you probably want a range of heights and you can probably spare some more people. But either way, I don't think anyone went and stood on top of that ball and gave them the time to sort that out. And so it just let Sydney be like, oh, cool, we can shoot now, cool, in. Perfect. You know, it was too easy. And that's to take nothing away from how well executed the kick was, because it was perfectly executed, but you gave them a big chance at it by the way you managed that free kick situation.
Yeah, I think that the time frame wasn't all that quick, but I think the fact of that gamesmanship that Taylor always engaged in, it puts people off a little bit. It makes them think about what the hell's going on. It just doesn't let them just run at their own rhythm. And that's the yep. key. So, yeah, that's a really good point, actually, Dave. But, yeah, I think De Vere, that's his area. He should be controlling all of that. He shouldn't be in the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Because if that's basically crossed in with a left peg to that back post, that's his job to get rid of it. so that yeah, that presumably left Laws organising it. And this is his first A-League game. It's unfair.
It's certainly some odd decision making going on there.
We should probably give credit to Laws. I honestly didn't notice. I think he was out of position once, maybe, and the rest of the time he looked like not a standout, obviously, but I thought he did pretty reasonably.
Yeah, perfectly accomplished.
Yeah, I noticed more mistakes from De Veer than I noticed from Laws. That's not to say De Veer was making a hell of a lot of them or anything, but I thought out of that centre-back pairing, the one who was more noticeably making mistakes was De Veer. So that says me Laws had an all right game. I mean, as a back line, as a whole unit, there definitely were some things. Some balls were going through far too easy and they weren't pressuring in the way they should and, you know, various stuff. But that was on all of them. I don't think an individual made a hell of a lot of mistakes.
I felt that they were playing quite spread on defence. They were quite wide. They didn't compress in a whole lot. I didn't think McGarry had too bad a game, considering he was coming back. Nothing, you know, a nice 5.5, 6 out of 10.
Yeah, well, I was saying before, his momentum pushing forward was restricted by the fact that Lewis was playing quite wide in front of him, so there wasn't a lot of space to go in. Defensively, he was sound. He wasn't at fault for closing down for the first goal. He wasn't involved in the second goal. There was nothing there. It didn't feel like he was out of place at all. I was quite comfortable with his performance.
Yeah, as you say, he didn't get very forward to kind of get noticed and made no mistakes. So, yeah, good stuff. Yeah. Payne, on the other hand, I thought he was solid defensively. His crossing was woeful.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Which is so disappointing because his crossing was so good last year. I felt that he was able to get crosses in regularly into the right areas.
Yeah, I think I want to say his crossing was more mixed. We saw no good crosses out of him this game, whereas last season when he hit them right, they were really good. But then there were a lot that were quite poor as well. But at least you knew there was the possibility of a good one coming. This game, we saw none of that.
No,
so any work he's been doing on that certainly hadn't brought about dividends.
No, that was my concern. And
I'll take the blame for that. I've got a pair of his boots at home from last season, so it's definitely on me.
Yeah, those are crossing boots.
Yeah, it must be his crossing boots. I'll post them over to him if he really wants them back.
The other thing that really concerned me about Payne was when Redenton got on, the combination between the two of them was abysmal. They just about ran into each other half a dozen times.
Yeah, it did feel like they'd never played together, and to be honest, they probably hadn't. Maybe up in Auckland in youth level, but to be fair, Payne's been playing overseas and when he was younger, so perhaps not. You're right, there's combination play there that needs to be worked on. It is the first game of the season that will get worked on. They've only had preseason games prior to this, and it's possible that combination hasn't seen each other yet. So.
Well, and not just that combination. I think there were a lot of combinations that looked weak. I think they were in that first half. There were definitely some players giving away a lot of ball that, you know, you could blame their individual performances, but I think it was more down to combinations, not knowing where each other were going to make runs, where other people were going to be, leaving certain people kind of at the end of the chain with the ball and looking like they're the one constantly giving it away, when I think there's an element of everyone to blame for that, and they were just the one left holding the can. So
I thought Rufa did pretty decently. I noticed that he had a couple of nice long direct passes to feet, very Steinman-esque. Like, I don't know whether he's picked that up.
It's interesting you say that, because I was going to say the opposite. I think he had a good game, but I think it was notable how unlike Steinman he is.
I think his screening is nowhere.
Yeah, it's notable how much you've lost there. I think, you know, with Devlin there, he's offering a really important role, and you get exactly what's on the you know, package there. But Rufa trying to do a bit more of a Steinman role, it's noticeable how strong Steinman was at that.
Yeah.
There's elements of it Rufa does well, but there's a lot of it that Rufa doesn't do.
No, I honestly didn't expect him to do that screen, because Steinman's ability to anticipate and screen was just next level.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen anyone in the A-League that does it quite like that, that hasn't played in Sydney colours.
Yeah, and I think as well, you look at how quickly Steinman moves the ball. I mean, his number of touches to number of passes, whatever that ratio is, must be incredibly close to one compared to most people in the league. You know, the number of times it's just a first-time ball to someone, just keeping it moving and keeping that pace as that pivot through the middle there is fantastic. Rufa doesn't offer that same ability to keep the pace up on moving the ball.
When it goes through him, it goes through slowly. Yep. But Steinman, it was like one dead touch right in front of his left or right peg, and then it was gone.
Yeah,
he already knew where he was going to pass.
Yep.
Yeah, you're dead right. Devlin, I don't think it was his finest game.
No.
which isn't too surprising considering how end-to-end it was for an eight.
I think it was
eight.
Excellent, though.
Oh,
he did pick up card, and there was a reason why he was subbed off, was because he was on that card.
Yep.
I think if he hadn't been on a card, it would have been Rufo off and Redenton on. Yep. But so I can understand the change that they made. And when they made the change, we were starting to get on top. And I don't know whether that was Sydney stepping back and holding back because they had the lead, or whether it was actually once Uli and Hemed came on, we were a completely different proposition up front.
I think it's very much that. It felt like they went, oh, we know how good Uli is, and we're pretty sure we've seen footage of Hemed. And he's a unit. He commits defenders. And that was something he did really well. But to Sydney's credit, they managed him very well. Like, he was very physical in there, and I can't remember who was defending him most of the time, but muscled up one-on-one most of the time. It was only once they got deep into the box that they started double-teaming him. Davila, they tried to kick out of the game a couple of times, but not anything worse than normal for him. I thought he actually slowed the ball down a lot for me, which is really problematic. He'd drop back, turn, and rather than getting rid of the ball, he'd sit on it, take a touch, take a touch, take a touch. By that stage, Sydney had dropped back, and then he'd pass backwards because he had no other option anymore. That really concerned me.
Again, that comes down to combination play. It comes down to seeing the options ahead of you, and it comes – so he should understand what ball's going to do, but perhaps him and Hemed haven't played together, so he's still learning what he's got to do. The outlet option a lot of the time was Fenton out on the left, and he would cross the ball in. A lot of those crosses weren't great, but it was the outlet and the option that Sydney were leaving open for us. And that's because, let's be honest, Fenton doesn't have a left, so it's coming back on the right to cross, coming back on the right to cross constantly.
And I think the crosses, even though nothing ended up coming of it, they were
in the
reasonably
right
decent
area.
Crosses. I mean, in terms of A-League quality, he's putting the ball in the right space, and they're, you've got a very good target man in the middle there that you were trying to hit. So,
and there were a couple of chances that came from it.
Exactly.
There definitely were some chances there.
I think particularly when you're feeling out a new striker like that, who you know should be good with his head and should be good with, you know, hitting a volley, just get the ball towards him, and particularly that late stage of the game, hope he can do some work with it. Particularly, I think, when you're playing out of position on the wrong side, you know, I think he did an admirable job there.
Yeah, I think he took advantage of the space he had. I mean, the problem again was that it wasn't Fenton, it was the speed, his inability to hit a left peg means he couldn't hit it straight away. Yeah. He had to cut in and take that extra second and the touch, and it means they could organise on Hemed a little more and watch that run. It's unfortunate. I was hoping that you would see a little more, some more direct runs through the centre. Unfortunately, the ones that did kind of eventuate were Rufa having a ping from a mile out.
Oh, and then obviously the one at the very end, which was the offside goal, which went straight through the middle. I think there was Uli that hit the strike and it came off. I think it was Hemed who was standing in an offside position.
It was.
Offside. Yep, it was genuine, like, it sucked. We thought it was in, but it was genuinely offside when it was hit, so be it. But it was at that point that I genuinely, once that happened, I'm like, okay, we're not going to get anything in this. But up to that point, it certainly felt like, for the 10 minutes leading up to it, that we were very strong and we were a chance of snicking a point out of that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. My vain hope was that this was going to be the A-League goal just to level up the handball from before, that they'd just let it stand because it came off his ass.
Yeah.
Because nothing would be more A-League than, you know, a tying goal against a team.
I mean, why couldn't the footage cut out for that one, you know? if we'd been relying on a wide angle halfway video for that, it would have stood.
Yeah,
that would have been. Well, to be fair, the touchy did put his flag up straight away.
He did put it up. He let the play out. Then he put his thing up, and so it would have been an offside position anyway if VAR hadn't been available. So.
Yeah, so I think it's safe to say what Dave said was exactly right at the beginning. A lot of things to work on. I don't think there was any area of the game that we didn't. I noticed that, who was it, when Baumgartner came on. Baumgartner, sorry. Yeah. His ability to pick a pass, he cut us apart a lot.
I think it was a lot more positive than it could have been. Defensively, we were stronger than I thought we were going to be. Again, I agree there's lots to work on, but it was not as bad at this point as I was genuinely concerned it could have been. But in attack, I felt we were, without having Uli and Hemed on, we looked toothless.
Like, yeah,
we just didn't have that cutting edge. We were creating some opportunities, but we just didn't have a cutting edge. The cutting edge was there when Hemed and Uli were there. Sydney defended resolutely. There was a lot of blocks. There was some good marshalling defence. There was good man marking stuff. And Redmayne's a good goalkeeper. So, you know, there was a lot of good play going in there. But without them on the field, that first 70 minutes, it just felt like we were a little bit at sea with the options that we had in front.
Yeah, for me, it's Hemed. It's not Davila.
He's going to free up the ball to play higher up, so he can be that creative 10 pivot, whereas Ball, whilst can play that, isn't, as we talked last week, isn't as a creative a player. The option is going to be there, and he can do the role, but he's a different player. Play him further forward, he takes pressure off him, yet he's going to draw players to him.
Yeah.
Uli's going to draw players to him, but he can play pivot, and he can also distribute better.
So I agree largely, because I think it's not Uli by himself. I think just putting Uli on the field doesn't fix it. But having all four of those names on the field at the same time is so incredibly strong. As a defender, who are you most worried about? All of them. You know, you don't have one person you can try and target out of the game anymore. You've got four people up there who can tear you apart. And that is incredibly important. So it suddenly becomes a very different prospect as a defender when you've got all of them on the park. And I think that's it for me, is that I would be very worried if we're seeing some of these players as impact players that we need to bring on for the last 20 against tired legs, rather than players that need to be on the field for 70, 80 minutes, and they're our primary options. Because I think if you play the, you know, I don't know what the injury state was or match fitness or any of that. Obviously, there were other things to take into consideration. But I think if we play some of those, you know, that lineup we had towards the end for the first 70 minutes, the game goes quite differently.
For me, it's Piscopo and Hemed. They're the two that make a difference. Once we've got that left channel working up high, I think that brings Hemed into the game, and that really is going to have to compress their back line. Hopefully that gives you a bit of time and space in between. Maybe that brings in Uli, but it definitely brings in Ball.
Yeah, I think Ball is so important in his work rate to freeing up the space for those others, because you know he's just going to be running for every ball and moving a lot and just generally being a hassle up there, that it frees space for Hemed or Piscopo or Uli to do that more creative stuff. But Ball is just going to work hard all day, and I think Hemed is going to be the same. You're going to have two guys potentially up top there just working, and that's going to be really annoying as a defender, and it'll mean guys like Uli, who are maybe a bit more lazy but creative, will have a bit more space every now and again to do something fantastic with.
Yeah, I think with that, the problem is that we've got three guys in that central midfield.
Yeah.
Only one of them can score. One has a good work rate, one has a good defensive ethos, and then we've got three that only goes into effectively two spots.
Correct. Yep.
And that's our problem. We need either goals out of Devlin or more running straight up the guts, up and back from Davila. I don't see either one of those guys able to play at six.
No. And I agree. I think it's where you also have to put Redenton into the mix in midfield as well. He's proven himself pretty capable in midfield. Is he maybe a better option to do one of those other roles? I don't know.
I think he's a six as well. I think it's like for like, the ponytail boys in at six. I'm looking at Cam and he's like, defending? What?
Yeah, I've switched off, sorry.
No, I think it's an interesting problem to have, because we have very capable midfielders, but I think in the structure we're trying to play, you can't fit them all on the field, and you have some clear weaknesses. So should we be trying to adapt the players to fit the structure, or should we maybe be considering reshaping how that midfield looks in order to fit what we've got?
The whole idea of a 4-2-3-1, which we talked about last season, maybe a little, last week, being slightly more pragmatic, where you play Hemed up top by himself, Ball, Davila, and probably in this situation, Lewis in that three, and then behind them play Redenton and or Rufa and Devlin. So the role is slightly different for Lewis in there, and he's probably a little more defensively minded of the three in that midfield three. Yep. So,
and I think Soterio is a fun option to have as well. I think
he can't start; he needs to come on late.
I agree, but I think. He clearly offers just such a lot of pace. I mean, you saw it when he did start, and he's willing to run all day. He's faster than anyone on the field. And, you know, when he gets in behind, it could create something. Obviously, his finishing is a bit woeful, and that's always been a criticism that's made of him. But if you had him on the field, you know, the last 20 minutes instead of the first 70, and Hemed's still out there, you know, Soterio getting in behind and cutting it back to a Hemed to just finish it, you know, that sort of stuff is quite an exciting prospect. And it's a nice option to be able to go, oh, we were playing Himeda up top by himself, but actually let's restructure this, bring Sotirio on with him and run against tired defenders. Suddenly it's just so different and quite exciting potentially. So I think we've got a lot of good options there.
I think that's a very good point, but I think it's almost a disservice to Sotirio. His work rate is phenomenal.
Absolutely. I mean,
to be that quick and just go up and back and up and back all day, it's a crying shame that he can't finish, because he would be an outstanding player with those two features.
Or that you can't get him playing as that midfielder. You know,
if you could
get him being that up and back midfielder with that fitness and that speed, it'd be phenomenal. But obviously that's not his skill set.
He wouldn't be in the A-League if he could do that, though.
Correct.
Right? His problem is the ball.
Yeah.
It's not his athletic ability.
100%. But just, you know, like, you do have an asset there and we just need to find the right way to use it. And I don't think putting him up top with ball for the first 70 minutes is the way to utilize
it. No, because that's just two players with work rate.
But I would hazard a guess that there were some match fitness issues with Uli and Hamed. Otherwise, there's no logical explanation what was going on there.
But you do bring up a good point, that his versatility, being able to play that impact or to run the defenders ragged and wear them out for the guys to come on, is useful.
Yep.
A really good squaddy. Would that he could score.
Hmm. But who do we think was good? I genuinely think Devlin and Ball were the only two I'd really give particular props to. I think Sotirio did all right for what he does, but, you know, he had some chances he probably should have scored and didn't.
Mm. But
Fenton was excellent.
Fenton was good when he came on.
He took every opportunity he was given, but he was given them.
A lot of opportunity. Yeah. He was given a lot of time and space to do what he did, but he took it, and fair enough too.
Yeah.
I reserve judgment on the other guys purely because, again, I felt like once we made those substitutions in the second half, the instruction that came with it was very different. And Lewis, obviously his job was a lot more wide and a lot more defensive than the job that Uli had when he came on, which freed up, as I say, Fenton for all the time and space down the wing. So therefore I struggle to judge McGarry on his crossing and his bombing up the line, because the opportunity just wasn't there for him. So, you know, it's I agree. Devlin and Fenton and Ball had good games.
Yeah.
I thought Rufa was decent. He made the team of the week, and I can understand why.
It left
in midfield.
Yeah,
as well. The way I look at those team of the week things, it's like these are the four defenders. These are the four midfielders. These are the couple.
It's the only
of
way you can do it, because it's like
it doesn't make any sense otherwise.
None whatsoever. If you're going to pit all 12 defensive midfielders against each other each week, and then pick the best one for that format, you know, it just doesn't work that way. So yeah.
I think Laws, maybe by proxy, we could say he had an all right game. It's a position you kind of want people to be anonymous, and he was. You only noticed glaring errors there, and we didn't see any.
Mm.
Whereas De Vere, we definitely spotted a few things, but maybe we were being harsher on him because we expect more from him now. But other players, I think, maybe reserve judgment for another week, because there were definitely some mistakes made, but it's early and it's hard to know what they were being asked to do.
Yeah, there was a lot of fives, five and a halves and sixes and maybe the odd four and a half in there, but nothing bad. We should probably, speaking of that, go on to the rest of the round. Cam, you've got it in front of you.
I do. So straight after our game was Melbourne Victory hosting Brisbane Roar. Brisbane won that one 3-1 away, which was quite exciting. Scott McDonald opened the scoring in the 16th minute for Brisbane, levelled up by McManaman in the 24th minute, and then Gillespie in the 60th put Brisbane 2 in front, and then Wenzel Halls in the 79th minute.
That was a nice finish to a classic striker's finish, Wenzel Halls.
The Scott McDonald goal was also interesting as well, because no one thought they'd scored it. They thought they were a mile offside. They didn't celebrate. Roar just kind of resigned themselves to the fact they were offside. Then VAR was like, oh, actually, it turns out you're onside. And they were like, what, really? Cool. And we're quite excited about that. But they were like, nah, no way. We're a mile off. But there was a lazy defender kind of standing on the byline that
goal. Yeah. You know? Oh, big bum McDonald. It's like when he thinks he's gotten in, he certainly gives it a full celebration, which is...
So the next game in the round was Macarthur hosting Central Coast, which was 2-0 to Central Coast. Yep. De Silva opened the scoring in the 35th minute, and it was rounded off by Smiley in the 89th minute.
Tell me his first name is Guy. Guy Smiley, Muppet
Jordan,
Show.
Jordan, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah. I understand the reference, mate.
The kids won't.
I understand the reference, yes. round was finished by Adelaide hosting Melbourne City. Adelaide won 2-0. Scoring was open in the 68th minute by Tommy Urich. That was after Scott Jamieson got a two yellow red card, being sent in the 65th minute. And
first one for dissent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
First yellow for dissent and the second yellow for a foul. Wow,
it wasn't a particularly good foul. Like, it was a promising attack that he broke up that he probably didn't need to, second one. But yeah, the first one was definitely for
that led to the goal too?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. I love it when that happens. And Stefan Mork scored the second in the 76th minute. So that was the rest. That was the round, and that puts Central Coast on top, the only team with 100% record from two games, because Sydney's played one and obviously has a 100% record. And Perth still hasn't played a game, and they might not play for, I think it's another week or two yet as well.
Oof, that could be certainly
not playing this week. So, Central Coast on top, but because of the COVID implications to the rounds, it's really hard to get a good read on the on the table, and obviously there's 2-1-0 games played. So.
But there's also some interesting results there. I mean, one, Central Coast winning two games in a row for the first time since 2018, which is good on them.
I have nothing but admiration for what they're doing at Central Coast, and I hope they have a great season, because I've had some awful seasons the last 3 to 4 years. I hope they do brilliantly this year. I really do.
What else? Adelaide beating City. That was an interesting little turn-up. So, I don't know whether this is early season results or maybe we were misreading all these transfers and just not picking it.
I think it's probably a bit of both. I think you're going to have some early season jitters, and I think as well, you know, you've talked about the scheduling stuff, and I think that's going to have later impact as well. I mean, we're meant to be playing, what is it, 8 games by the end of January, and we're going to play 4 instead, which means those 4 games are going to have to be caught up somewhere else, and so we're going to see potentially some really tight schedules that'll have impact on whoever they affect most. So,
and talking about that, this is the first week where the rescheduling of games is going to make an impact.
Yeah.
Because if you look at tomorrow, it was supposed to be Melbourne City versus Newcastle, but instead it's Newcastle versus Western Sydney.
Yep.
So, I think there's a few others like that in this round. Brisbane were supposed to host Sydney, but now they're hosting Melbourne Victory. You know, so our game against Western United's been called off. MacArthur's games against Melbourne City's been called off. So there's actually more games postponed in this round than is actually taking place.
But there's obviously the AR game versus MacArthur that's reschedule.
So. Yep. The Friday game is now Newcastle Jets versus Western Sydney. The Saturday game is our game against MacArthur, and the Sunday game is Brisbane versus Melbourne Victory. Everything else has been called off due to COVID.
So. Yep. Yeah, and I think we're going to see the impact of that take a toll over the season. I think
come April, come May, it's going to take a massive. There's going to be a lot more injury worries. There's going to be a hell of a schedule. If we're at the situation where I know they're legislating that all crowds at sporting events have to wear masks now in Australia, that's
contravenes FFA rules too.
Yeah, because you can't see the faces. Yeah. But legislatively, if it's in, it has to be in, right?
Yeah.
So I think. Yep. If there's, like, you're going to have small crowds anyway, you're going to play lots and lots of games in midweek to make up for the difference. I really think this feels like it's going to be a season of TV watching, not just for us because we don't have a choice, but for everybody because you just can't make all the games because of the loose schedule that has to be in play.
Yeah, you're certainly not going to away games as readily, even if you're in Australia.
At all. I don't think you'd be travelling at all because there's obviously restrictions between interstate travel. So if you're in Melbourne, great, you get to watch all the Melbourne teams play regularly. And if you're in Sydney, you get to watch the Sydney teams play regularly. And you get a bonus because Wellington's there as well. So you've got 4 teams really within a decent travel time. But, there's not going to be too much travelling interstate. So.
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem, unfortunately. Not much to do, but...
MacArthur.
Well.
You know, what are we going to do? Do we reckon we start early in Hemed?
No. If they're only getting 20 minutes... They're not fit to start, surely. I thought it was a bit more than 20 minutes, but it wasn't much more, was it?
Yeah, no, it wasn't much more.
Yeah, so if they're not basically playing 30, 35. 31. Sorry?
They came on in the 59th minute.
Oh, did they?
Yep.
Sydney
scored in the 55th, 56th, and they came on as a result of that goal.
You would think that Uli would be the more match fit than Hemed, but I'm not sure that Hemed needs as much fitness as...
Yeah.
Is Uli. Certainly we know that when Uli doesn't get a lot of play, he struggles to get back into it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Ahmed's that way, but certainly he looked a lot sharper when he was playing, a lot more physical, a lot more willing to get involved. And I think that he probably is more important to the team in that we don't have anyone at that pointy end apart from him.
So I think that showed that we have to play them because of how much better we were. I would rather they play the 70 minutes at the start than the 20 minutes at the end. For your Piscopo example, purely, bring him on at 70 minutes running an entire defence makes a bit of a difference, right?
Well, and I think as well, even
Sotirio.
Yeah, sorry, I said Piscopo, my bad.
Even if we assume we're only getting a half hour out of them, I would still rather it was the first half hour rather than the last. And I think it gives you options as well, particularly with the new five sub rule. Play them for, the first half hour and see if they can push through to half time. And then you're not even using up one of your substitution opportunities to take them off. And, if you only bring them on for the last half hour, you're not going to find out where that actual limit is. You can still be ready to bring them off at 30, 40 if you need to. But if they can get through to half time, fantastic.
And they played 35.
Yep.
They played 35 against Sydney. That means they can push to half time. Because they came on the 59th minute.
You'd certainly hope so, right?
They can do 45 minutes.
Yep. And so I think you're better to bring them on for that first half, and then if you have to take them off at halftime, do that. But at least you maybe have a lead in that game, rather than if you concede one like you did against Sydney, you're suddenly chasing the game, rather than you're ahead and can defend it and, have your plan different to that. You're suddenly having to try and chase the game.
I think if they're getting 30 minutes, then 45 is in the stretch.
No, I don't think so.
And certainly they didn't look like 30 minutes was too, bridged too far. So,
but it becomes different if they are, in fact, carrying an injury niggle. That's an entirely different prospect, which we assume is not the case. We assume it's just match fitness. But, yeah, you'd want to know what's going on there. And obviously the Phoenix do.
Do we know what's happening with Piscopo? Because his is an injury.
His is an injury. I think it was a couple of weeks at least, wasn't it? So
I don't know, but I'm happy to investigate for next week and let you know.
Yeah. So assuming that he's not ready, that would be Clayton Lewis again rather than Mradovich.
Mradovich did very little. I wasn't impressed with what
I saw. He scored the goal. Our only goal this season.
That's right. But that was...
Yeah, I saw nothing from him.
And I didn't even see that. So I literally saw nothing. So.
I didn't think Lewis was anything fantastic either myself. I thought he struggled.
More involved.
Hmm. Of the two... I would rather have had him.
I think he got more touches, but I also think he gave away more ball. There were obviously as a result of having more touches, he had more opportunities to give away, but I do think he turned it over a lot more. So it's a matter of, I think, what you were asking them to do and who was doing it better, because we honestly don't know. Was Lewis meant to be sitting wide like that, or is that just where he naturally inclined himself to and that's how that happened, Yeah. Or was he asked to do that and,
I suspect he was probably asked to, because I don't think Clayton's a natural wide player like that.
He's not. He's a central player, 100%. Correct. He will suit the 2-2-2 that we play because he likes to take up those central attacking kind of positions. I can imagine the link-up play that he can provide over time with Devlin and Davila will actually be quite good. I just think it's not quite there yet and it needs a bit of time to develop. Again, it's his first game for the Knicks. He'd been playing at Handy Prem level prior to this. Obviously, he's had a nudge at professional level in the UK playing League One as well. So I think he is that player. I just think we need some time for him to develop into this team.
So speaking of Handy Prem, we should probably get into that because we are starting
up again.
It
starts back. It does. It starts back this weekend. First game is a home game for the Wee Knicks against Canterbury United. That's at 2 o'clock this Saturday the 9th in Lower Hutt at Fraser Park. So get on down and support them.
That should be an interesting one too, because Wee Knicks are going well and Canterbury sitting mid-table-ish.
Yeah, so Canterbury are sitting second bottom, but the Phoenix are only 1 point ahead of them in fifth. Mm. So it's quite a tight table, obviously. And the Wee Knicks have been playing some good football. I've only seen them outplayed once. I think they were outplayed against Auckland, but I didn't see that game. But I did see them outplayed against East. They were excellent against Team Wellington when they played them and were unlucky to lose that late. I think Team Wellington were the better team, but they were still unlucky to lose it late. And then they played some excellent games since then with two wins. So that could be two very evenly matched teams. Yeah. That's followed on Sunday the 10th at 2 p.m. Hamilton hosting Team Wellington. So T-Dubs is top. Hamilton is 1 point behind, but I think sitting third on goal difference. So that could be quite a good game. And had they been playing well, obviously they've got, I think they've got Tommy Simi and Derek, what's his name? Starts with a T. it's gone. Another guy, I think, from the Solomons playing up front, and they've been playing very, very well.
But so, as we know from Tommy, he doesn't score against the big teams.
No. So also on Sunday is the Eastern Suburbs hosting Hawke's Bay. I see that's at 3 p.m. And then at 4 p.m., which will be the TV game, is the Super City Derby, Waitakere United versus Auckland City. So, yeah, that's 4 o'clock, and that will likely be on Sky.
So how many rounds have we got left now?
So this is match day 7 and of 14. Obviously, because we lost two teams, we're not having a full 16-round competition. It's only going to be 14. So,
and yeah. When are Auckland City scheduled to go away? It's like the beginning of February, isn't it?
Like, yes, it is. And those games, as I see, thus far, haven't been rescheduled thus so far. You have to question what they will do. Like, they're scheduled to play Team Wellington on the 7th of February.
They'll
be in the UAE for.
So. Well, if they're going, I think there's definitely rumblings around the traps that going overseas and having to come back is a significant risk. In terms of cost, in terms of the players' health and welfare and all of that. And
they have quarantine for 2 weeks when they come back, and they're amateurs.
Correct. So they may well not go. I mean, ostensibly, they're an amateur side. So saying we need to find $3,000 per player to pay for quarantine when they return, you guys need to give up quarantine time potentially at both ends, mm-hmm. as well as potentially risk getting seriously ill. I think there's a – where there's smoke, there's fire, I would say, in terms of the rumblings I hear around the traps that – there's a very real possibility they wouldn't go.
So the rumblings are from within the team more than...
Oh, well, no, I think just generally I hear those rumblings around football circles that they're in discussions about not going, and that's why New Zealand football aren't rushing to reschedule these fixtures, because if they don't go, they don't need to reschedule them.
There's also the point, there is no quarantine space available till March. Yep. So if they go overseas, they can't. That's not 2 weeks. They can't get back in until March because there's no space in the quarantine facilities for them to go to. So they're actually going for 2 months. That's huge. So if there was space for them to come back, sure, I guess they could do it. But amateur sportsmen.
Amateurs, they've got jobs.
They've got income they have to worry about. That's time off that they wouldn't necessarily be able to recover from. If they got COVID, it's not just the 2 weeks that they have to look at. There's a long period of recovery as well. I think going is a bad choice. I really do.
From a human perspective.
Yeah. And I think it would maybe be different if this had all been planned very carefully already. The fact that we haven't heard, like, you know, if this was all set in stone and it was confirmed, those games would already be rescheduled. The fact this is still in the umming and ahhing stage says you've got to be tilting that needle more and more and more towards don't go.
There's going to have to be some massive financial investment from FIFA to make it worthwhile for these amateur footballers to go away for effectively 2 months.
Yep.
You couldn't see Cam doing the air quotes there, so just imagine them.
Yeah, well, I was hoping that maybe if we knew someone in New Zealand Football Comms who could let us in on the end. But
someone who previously has appeared on an award-winning podcast, you mean?
Yeah.
Maybe even was a regular contributor.
Yeah, maybe might want to come on or set us up someone to chat to about this scenario.
Yeah, well, we'll soon find out if she actually listens or not.
When we tag her in a tweet and say, Ella, you need to listen to this.
Ella? Are we talking about? Oh. That's pretty much all the actual on-the-ground football that we've got to talk about. But there is a couple more things that have come up of interest. First one was the Football Australia has published an article about a white paper about domestic transfers within Australia.
You're developing a policy on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a quick read of it.
I didn't get through it all, unfortunately. I didn't have time.
It doesn't actually have any detail.
Okay.
It's basically saying that we are thinking about it. We have thought about it previously, and we're still thinking about it, and we want to do it, and it's just a question of how.
There's a lot of talk of we need a modern fit-for-purpose system. It doesn't really detail what that system will be. It's mostly we need that, and I think everyone would agree that that absolutely is the case, and they're making some sort of movements towards deciding to do that. Great.
The organisations that they name check as who they're consulting with was just the weirdest group. It was the European Club Leagues or something, so I assume something to do with the UEFA Clubs organisation, but then Manchester United and Olympiacos. It's like two clubs that don't really have the greatest interest in paying transfer fees.
So they're undertaking a global search. That's what we're.
Is that what we're reading into? Is that what the implication?
I mean, that's what every club says when they're looking for a new CEO or a new striker or whatever, right? So
certainly the word global was used in there somewhere, if I recall. But it is interesting that we are finally getting to that point. I think that is coming back to Cam's well wishing for Central Coast. I remember someone tweeted that basically there are something like 25. Former Mariners alums who are playing in the A-League at the moment, but not for the Mariners,
yeah.
Which is a massive number. And certainly if we had domestic transfers, Mariners would have benefited significantly in the past, and I hope they still would again. And it would give them a real benefit, real shot in the arm, rather than having to kind of scrape the bottom of the barrel for cash to pay their players.
Well, I think as well, it's got to be good at a club level, because part of what they talk about in that article is kind of recompense for training players, which obviously would benefit someone like the Mariners, but also the clubs that these players are playing at before that as well. I mean, you do see the FIFA transfer system has percentages assigned to clubs for development across a player's lifetime, and I think this is looking to build that into a domestic transfer system as well, which is got to be good for not only the clubs like the Mariners, who could do with that for how they compete in the A-League, but, you know, I'm sure there are clubs below every team playing in Australia that that will also be seeing some of this money come through, because, you know, someone like Cammy Devlin definitely has played club football for a long time, and, you know, it'd be good to see those clubs getting recognition for that.
Yeah, certainly we've had a fair few Aussie players come through that, you know, even the Knicks would benefit in some way, shape or form. And I think that it's a good leveler for those larger clubs that are able to throw big money in front of players and get them switch. De Silva from the Mariners, I remember him switching to Sydney for big money and then having to shift on back. It would have been nice that the Mariners had gotten something for that. We should probably get on to more organisational news now. The Jets. Unfortunately, their club situation is in a bit of turmoil. Is that a fair word, Dave?
I think you've said unfortunately. I think if you were a Jets fan, you would be viewing this as really good news.
Yep.
I think you've had an owner who's been neglecting the club and, you know,
absentee.
Yeah, largely been problematic, that has had the license stripped from them, and so the new league organisation has been very clear. This is not the Jets folding. It's just the licence being taken away, and it'll be run by the league until they can find a suitable owner. And that's got to be a step forward for them. Obviously, it leaves them in a bit of limbo, but it removes the massive uncertainty of an owner who's just neglecting a club.
And they've been very clear about the actions that they're taking. Yep. It's the league, the other owners of the league, that are taking over the club in the interim until someone else comes along. All the players are being offered contracts with that new entity, so they all have jobs. They're not changing anything other than where the license sits. That's not just for the A-League team, that's for the W-League and the Y-League teams as well. So they're basically keeping that everything in place until a new owner can come in place. The FFA is stepping away from that, which I think is also the right option. With the new league being in place, it needs to be the league owners that help with this.
It's an interesting one. Because I was going to say, previously, when the FFA has been the league owner and it's run clubs, we've always called that a bit of a conflict of interest.
This is why I think it's good the FFA is stepping away.
Well, no, see, I would argue finally we're at the point where the right people to be running it might actually be the FFA, because they no longer have the conflict of interest in also owning the league.
Sure, I can see that point.
So you would suddenly have a potentially independent body who could take over the management of it, because the FFA are independent from the league now. Whereas instead you've got the other clubs competing against a club they also are managing, which feels very odd. I'm sure no one's taking advantage of that conflict in any way. I'm sure it's been done all above board. But it's funny that the FFA have been removed from a scenario, because I think it's finally the time where it might have made sense for them to be the one doing it.
I totally agree. I had the same thought. My concern is, you take that hypothetical situation, say the Jets start doing well. It's kind of like, well, there's going to be a whole lot of pressure on from within the A-League groups, kind of parent clubs, like, hey, what's going on?
I mean, I don't think so. I assume what they'll be doing is they'll be operating in a way that is, here's the salary cap, you're allowed to spend that, you're not going outside of your means at all. But when it comes to football operations, we have nothing to do with it.
I have no doubt that that's what they're going to do. Because there's no real pressure on them at all now. It's just basically keep it afloat, find the right person, get them.
Yeah.
But if things get difficult, that's my concern. It's not so much whether they would do anything wrong. It's just that perception of impropriety. Yeah. And that's the problem we've got to avoid.
Yeah.
This organisation is a very, very crucial part. We're right at the very beginning. To have that perception about them, that kind of that mud sticks, whether it's valid or not. So trying to keep everything really clear. They've communicated well, as you said. That was great. I was really happy with that. But they've got to make sure that they avoid any controversy at all. Otherwise, there's a real problem. Because, I mean, if this comes along, if there's any controversy that trying to get a new investor for that club, they're going to be sitting there going, why would I invest when someone can come along and stiff me? Like, you know,
yeah,
that's problematic. Use your words, Cam.
No, I'm good.
Well, hopefully we're all good because I think that's probably the end of our conversation.
I mean, I feel like we missed a glaring item we could have talked about.
Oh, by all means.
We've got a game next Saturday and we didn't make any predictions. We talked a little about who we thought we should start and nothing about how we think that game might go.
I would struggle to predict it because I've just got no read on MacArthur at all. They look like a really good team on paper, but Mariners...
Well, no, see, this is the interesting thing. They looked really good in their first game as well. They looked exactly like the team they look on paper.
They didn't and look then they looked like Mariners.
Absolute dog shit against the Mariners.
Yeah. See, I didn't...
The Mariners were decent, but MacArthur looked a much weaker side, which if they'd looked weak first time out and had got better, that would be easier to get a read on. But instead, they came out firing and then it all went to shit. So
I didn't see that game. I just saw the highlights and it looked like basically Mariners counterattacked on them and just took their chances. Is that a fair?
Yeah, that'd be fair. But I think MacArthur looked weak in attack. And so Mariners were quite comfortable going, yeah, you keep the ball. You're not doing anything with it. Sweet. Well, we'll cut you open when you turn it over. Right. And yeah.
You reckon, Dave? What do you reckon? You brought it up. You got to go first.
I think if we can improve from our performance against Sydney, we should win this. I think it'll be tight, though, so I wouldn't be surprised to see a 2-1 to us, something like that. If, however, we don't fix any of those problems from the Sydney game and play at that same level with a weak defence, I think we'll be struggling for a point.
Derbyshire will take us apart.
Yeah,
fair enough. I think something similar, but I think comes down to who we start up front, because I think we'll go for the same defense, same lineup defensively. And as you say, if we worked on those things, that's great. But if we start the players up front early and Hemed up front, like I think we should, then I think we can win this game 2-0, maybe 3-1. Because I think there's definitely goals in that group of people. But if we don't start those guys, then I think it's going to be something like a 1-1 draw. Remember, pre-season, I predicted MacArthur were going to be very good purely because they were working to a different set of rules to everybody else when it comes to financial investment in the club. So I think MacArthur, over the course of the season, should be quite good. And I think a 1-1 draw might be a good result.
Did neither of you watch this game? You didn't hear the cowbells?
Yeah.
I was okay with the cowbells.
Oh, no, see, I like them as a concept, but they've clearly printed those up with a little MacArthur logo and made them out of just tin, and they sound terrible.
Yeah.
They do not sound like a cowbell. They sound like jingle bells. It's horrendous.
See, I'm okay.
If they were there with actual cowbells, I would be like, fair enough, you know. Yeah. Waikato have been doing that in rugby for years, and it's fine. I have no problem with that. But these sounded like little tinny bells that didn't make any sense and were not discernible as a cowbell, except that you knew, having seen them, that's what they'd obviously tried to do. Yeah. So, I hope someone corrects that in the long term for MacArthur and that we're not listening to
They've got 2,000 tinny bells already out there now, so they're going to be around for a long time. I commend them.
They were trash. Hopefully they break quickly.
I commend them for trying to use something which is based in the culture of the region.
Absolutely.
For creating some atmosphere. And I saw someone online mention or compare them to vuvuzelas. And I can understand why the incessant noise would have been distracting. But I think in this particular situation, and I'm not commenting on this vuvuzelas because I didn't experience those. In this particular situation, I think commended. You've done something very, very good. You're trying to create an atmosphere when chanting and things are not actually physically allowed at this point in time. So go for it. Do it again.
I would say concept A, fantastic.
Execution
D at best. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
In case anyone wants my prediction. No. Okay, cool.
He did ask initially, so you have to throw it out there.
I am very much concerned. I think we're going to ship goals. We will not get out with a clean sheet, not against that kind of attack. The question is whether we, as Cam says, whether we start Hemed. That's the important one for me. Piscopo being back would be even better. But, I think Dave's bang on the money when he says that we need those guys on early and basically get into the game rather than having to chase it. We're a different team.
Get out in front and make them chase you.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, put them under a bit of pressure. If they played not so great last week, so if you put them under pressure as well, hopefully you can crack them. So I think that that's probably all us. Dave, you don't have anything else to bring up?
No. Oh, that's good. No, I think we finally talked about, you know, the game that's coming. So I'm good with that.
We were just so out of practice about actually exactly, talking about football rather than just making
shit up. We talked about the last game a lot, and yeah, we covered bits and pieces of it, so it's fine.
In fact, it's us three again next week because Pat's not here, so we could even book in the next time for next week already, so we already know.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm
doing. Off record. We'll do it afterwards.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fair enough. So thank you for listening, and we'll hopefully you'll hear us again next week. Goodbye from Cam, Dave, and myself. Ciao. Cowbells bring you.
Highview Sports, official broadcaster of the A-League, brings you.
Someone got their license revoked and it wasn't us, brings you.
Squatting on a license, brings you.
Three worldies in one game, bring you.